treatment plan itself is going to operate from early April through the end of October, so during the summer season.
The Donlin Gold Mine proposal edges forward with a draft wastewater discharge permit. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Friday, November 24th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, clamping down on opioid prescriptions could affect those with legitimate pain management needs.
What about the few of us that aren't abusing the medications and are following the programs? What happens to us?
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Do you need health insurance for next year? Did you know Alaska's individual market health insurance rates have dropped by more than 20% for 2018? More than 90% of Alaskans who sign up at healthcare.gov are eligible for tax credits to help pay the costs. Open enrollment is November 1st through December 15th of this year. Check out healthcare.gov to find out what your insurance options are for 2018. This message sponsored by the Alaska Division of Insurance. Colder temperatures are here, and the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation reminds you of the danger of carbon monoxide, a poisonous gas that you can't see or smell. If it builds up in your home, it can be deadly. Be safe this winter and have a qualified mechanic ensure your heating system is working properly. Never run your car in the garage or operate a portable generator in an enclosed space. Finally, always ensure your home has a working carbon monoxide detector. This message sponsored by AHFC.
Alaska authorities have released the name of a skier who died in an avalanche. Alaska State Troopers say 60-year-old Randall Burkt of Anchorage was killed in the avalanche earlier this week. Troopers say they were notified around 2:30 p.m. Wednesday of the avalanche in the Hatcher Pass area in which a skier was missing. Hatcher Pass is a glacial valley near Wasilla. It's a favorite with recreational skiers and snowboarders. Medical and rescue crews were dispatched to the scene. At the time of the avalanche, three skiers had been in the area. The missing skier was found, but efforts to revive him were unsuccessful. Thanksgiving saw the final Great Alaska Shootout at the University of Alaska Anchorage, and local college basketball fans had plenty to be thankful for. In the championship game between the University of Alaska Anchorage women's team and Tulsa, UAA came back with 6 minutes left on the clock to win 59-53. This is the women's seventh tournament championship in their final shootout game. The UAA men lost to Cal State Bakersfield on Wednesday and were even closer to total elimination last night, trailing by 6 points with less than a minute and a half on the clock. A couple three-pointers, including one at the buzzer, sent the game into overtime. That's when some layups and rebounds led the Seawolves to a 78-73 victory over Santa Clara. They will play College of Charleston on Saturday for the fourth spot in the tournament. Donlin Gold has taken another step toward opening its proposed mine. State regulators have sent Donlin a draft permit for wastewater discharge into Crooked Creek before it flows into the Kuskokwim River. KYUK's Anna Rose MacArthur reports.
For Donlin Gold to operate its proposed mine, it's going to need water. Lots of water. About 17,500 gallons per minute throughout the life of the mine. Most of the water will come from the ground and be used to separate microscopic flecks of gold embedded in rock. The process will release heavy metals and rely on cyanide. Diverting the water will reduce the amount in surrounding streams. In some designs, miles of fish-supporting waterways would be lost. Then there's the water that comes out. Seepings from the tailings or the leftover rock at the mine, water from the workers' camp, and water that drains into the mine pit. All that water needs a place to go. Donlin wants to empty it, after it's been treated, into Crooked Creek, about 10 miles north of the village of Crooked Creek and the Kuskokwim River. The company has received a draft permit from the Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation to do just that. The permit sets the standards for the water. Alan Nakanishi is the state's technical engineer on the project.
The water quality still has to meet our water quality standards under the Clean Water Act.
And under state law, the discharged water has to, quote, be adequate to fully protect existing uses of the water. One of those uses is fishing. The Kuskokwim's 5 salmon species have been recorded in Crooked Creek, as well as 12 resident fish species. Donlin plans to treat the water with reverse osmosis, a process for removing substances dissolved in water. But the treatment plant will not operate during winter. Kurt Parkin is Donlin's spokesperson.
So the treatment plant itself is going to operate from early April through the end of October, so during the summer season.
Donlin will recycle the water during the rest of the year. Contaminants removed from the water will be dumped into the tailings, all the leftover mined rock. If approved, the permit would require the discharged water to be tested once a month and possible legal action if standards are not met. Donlin has had 10 days to comment on the draft permit. The state will open a 60-day public comment period in mid-December and hold 3 public hearings in late January. Hearings will be in Bethel, Aniak, and Anchorage, and will cover not only this wastewater discharge draft permit, but also draft permits for waste management and the project's reclamation and closure. In Bethel, I'm Anna Rose MacArthur.
Hatcher Pass is now $500,000 closer to having a chairlift for snowboarders and skiers. The recreation area in the Talkeetna Mountains north of Palmer has long been popular among snow sports enthusiasts, and there have been rope tows that helped pull skiers upslope there in the past. More recently, supporters of lift access skiing in Hatcher Pass got a huge boost when the Mat-Su Health Foundation announced a $500,000 grant toward the goal of building a chairlift on the lower slopes of Government Peak. The money goes to a nonprofit formed in 2015 called Hatcher Alpine Experience, known as HACT. The group announced the funds Tuesday. Gil Carr is the vice chair of the HACT's board.
This is by far the closest to having an operating ski area in Hatcher in literally decades. So we're pretty stoked about it. The potential here is real, and we're moving along quite nicely, I think.
The ski area supporters have already cleared some trails, and initial plans call for the installation of a refurbished 3-person chairlift to access beginner terrain. Later, HACT hopes to have enough money to purchase a high-speed 4-person chairlift called a quad that will go higher into the mountains. Carr says the Health Foundation awarded the recent grant because the funding helps fulfill its mission of improving the well-being of a wide range of people in the Mat-Su region, in this case through skiing.
That's a healthy activity, right? And so think about having a ski hill in the valley that is accessible and safe for, kids, teenagers, families.
With the recent grant, Carr says the first lift could be installed as soon as next summer and be in operation by the following winter. He says the timing depends on continued fundraising and whether the board decides to commit to a timetable of putting down deposits for construction. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, Alaska Native perspective on the annual Alaska Day commemoration in Sitka.
Anytime race relations are brought up, too often, people of color are told how we should and shouldn't feel.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Alaska Humanities Forum grants support creative projects that share the stories of Alaska and explore what it means to be Alaskan. Get details and apply at akhf.org. This message sponsored by Alaska Humanities Forum. Open enrollment for the health insurance marketplace in Alaska is now through Friday, December 15th. Enrollment assistance is available and it's free. Visit getcoveredalaska.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Children's Trust. Did you know while exposed to secondhand smoke, every breath you take can damage your heart? Cells lining blood vessels become swollen and inflamed. Plaque builds narrowing blood vessels and clots can form, robbing the heart of oxygen. Exposure to secondhand smoke increases your heart disease risk by up to 30%. It's your heart protected. This message sponsored by Alaska's Tobacco Quitline, 1-800-QUIT-NOW.
A state program is aiming to slow the opioid epidemic in Alaska, but some worry it could have negative side effects. KTOO's Julia Caulfield reports.
Mary Alicia Parr sits in a wheelchair in her Mendenhall Valley living room. The lifelong Juneau resident is unable to walk because of spine damage. She says she has been in physical therapy, but also takes prescribed Oxycontin and Percocet for chronic pain management. Surrounded by Christmas decorations and the gurgle of an aquarium, she says she's worried about new regulations restricting opioid prescriptions.
It's a very tough situation. Yes, the drug abuse on the streets needs to stop. It's awful. But what happens to the other people? I don't have any answers for that yet. Look it.
The Prescription Drug Monitoring Program, or PDMP, has been in Alaska since 2008. While the monitoring program was originally voluntary, it became mandatory in July. It's an online database set up by the state. Physicians, pharmacists, or even veterinarians log the controlled substances they prescribe. Those controlled substances include opioids. The program allows prescribers to check if a patient is already receiving a prescription from another doctor and discourages overprescribing.
The primary goal of the PDMP is to be a meaningful force in curbing opioid misuse and addiction in the state.
Sarah Chambers is the deputy director of the Division of Corporations, Business, and Professional Licensing. She says the monitoring program informs doctors when patients ask for duplicate opioid prescriptions.
That can be done through, at the front end, through providing medical personnel with information to make decisions before prescribing. The PDMP data can be used after the fact as information to help feed our healthcare experts in the state and make sure that they're aware of prescribing trends and practices.
The main purpose of the program is to be an educational resource, but Chambers says overprescribers could face disciplinary action. Dr. David Miller is a surgeon in Juneau and registered for the monitoring program once it became mandatory. He says trying to reduce overprescribing is worth the extra effort, but he worries it won't have the desired effect.
I would like to see some numbers that show that this has an effect. If all you're doing is increasing workload for physicians and you don't get the desired effect, that's always a possibility. I have a feeling that physicians that overprescribe narcotics are still going to continue to do that. But it's at least a step in the right direction to try to rein some of this practice in.
But the new regulations could be hurting patients who use prescribed opioids as a form of pain management, including PAR.
They've helped me a great deal. They've made it to where I can get up during the day and be mobile, whereas before I couldn't hardly move.
She says she understands the restrictions, but...
Yes, it has been abused greatly by a lot of people. Unfortunately, the people with chronic pain are getting caught in the middle of this.
PAR says she used to go to a pain management clinic in Juneau, but since it closed earlier this year, she's had trouble finding a doctor who will prescribe what she needs. She believes it has to do with the changes in legislation.
They're frightened to do this, and I understand, but what about the few of us that aren't abusing the medications and are following the programs? What happens to us?
Chambers, who oversees the program, says there are provisions that allow for doctors to prescribe larger amounts, as long as it's appropriate treatment and documented properly. She says the program hasn't collected enough data to see if the changes are helping, but she hopes more data, due out this winter, will show the program is working. In Juneau, I'm Julia Caulfield.
A major increase to the land granted to the new Petersburg Borough is now official. Governor Bill Walker signed legislation last week granting more than 14,000 acres of state land to the local government. KFSK's Joe Vicknicki reports.
Good. Assuming I've done that all right. I think I got everything spelled right. Name right, so...
Governor Bill Walker signed the bill at Petersburg's Sons of Norway Hall and spoke about putting lands under local control.
Not a big fan of someone in another state saying what we can do in our state, and nor do I think we ought to be saying here what they can do in their state. They ought to do what they're doing, we do our thing. So this is sort of a version of that, is that, you didn't get all the land you're entitled to. I'm only too happy to put my name on the signature, and again, all the credit goes to those that have spoken before me. Because they did all the heavy lifting, I get to hold and kiss babies and sign documents and whatnot. So.
Under state law, cities and boroughs are entitled to select 10% of available state land within their boundaries. When voters approved the formation of the Petersburg Borough in 2013, it meant expanded boundaries for the municipal government and an additional land selection beyond what had already been chosen by the city of Petersburg. Borough officials went to the legislature this year to increase that amount and scored big. Senate Bill 28 is nearly a tenfold increase in the land grant and allows the borough to take a total of 14,666 acres. The bill's sponsor, Sitka Republican Senator Bert Stedman, was out of state during the signing, but his staffer, Melissa Kukesh, said the legislation will give the borough opportunity for future economic growth.
That's vitally important in this climate that we have, and I know Senator Stedman was very happy about that, but again, sends his regrets for not being here for this historic event.
Kukesh helped shepherd Stedman's bill through the legislature and noted it was her first. Sitka Democrat Jonathan Christ Tompkins introduced a companion bill in the House. The bill saw no votes of opposition in the legislature and was one of only a couple dozen passed by both the House and Senate this year. It's almost all of the remaining state land in the borough that hasn't already been designated for another use. Parcels are spread throughout the borough and could be sold off to generate revenue from the sale and property tax from future owners. Some parcels also could be developed for rock and gravel pits or other uses. Mayor Mark Jensen thought the borough would have many ways to use the land.
But we'll see it. Some of it can hopefully be used for mitigation for projects and maybe on the island here for some rock sources. So there's many, many uses, and I think now it's up to our land selection committee to pinpoint down what we want. And then, of course, before you could do anything, I understand it all has to be surveyed. So I don't know the specifics, but there's a ways to go before we could actually probably put it for sale or develop or whatever we're going to do.
A committee of local residents met into last year to determine top priorities for a smaller land selection. With the increase, they'll have to restart meetings to lengthen that priority list. The State Department of Natural Resources values the total land grant at more than $78 million. In Petersburg, I'm Joe Vicnicki.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
Alaska Pipeline Service Company, operating the 800-mile Trans-Alaska Pipeline since 1977.
And by
Wells Fargo, with over 13,000 ATMs and more than 6,000 branches coast to coast. For a branch location near you, visit wellsfargo.com. If you're a single person who makes less than $60,240 per year, you're eligible for federal tax credits to help pay health insurance premium costs. If you need health insurance for 2018, there's a limited window to act. Open enrollment for 2018 plans is from November 1st through December 15th of 2017. If you don't have coverage, it could be financially devastating. Sign up at healthcare.gov. This message sponsored by the Alaska Division of Insurance.
Older Persons Action Group publishes Senior Voice, Alaska's only statewide publication for seniors, and is an excellent source of information for families and caregivers. SeniorVoiceAlaska.com. This message sponsored by OPAG.
Ketchikan,
Kotzebue,
Dillingham,
Sitka,
Chugiak,
Fairbanks,
Fort Yukon,
Wrangell,
Barrow,
Unalaska, Dutch Harbor,
Alaknarechamut.
This is AK on Alaska News Nightly. I'm Dave Waldron. This week on AK, to celebrate or not to celebrate. The holidays are a time of tradition, but also reflection for why we celebrate the way we do. And in Sitka, no holiday is as much of a lightning rod for cultural debate as Alaska Day. Historically, October 18th marks the day Russia transferred Alaska to the United States. But in the Alaskan Native community, many regard it as the day their land was lost, bought and sold by colonial powers. KCAW's Emily Kwong reports on how two perspectives for one holiday collided on the very same hill.
The time is October 18th.
The year is 2017, but you wouldn't know it at first glance. There's beards and bonnets and soldiers lining the rim of Castle Hill with guns pointing to the sky. This year's Alaska Day is the big one for Sitka, the 150th. And even the gun salute will be historically accurate, 42 cannon shots echoing off the mountains.
It was an unusually fine day, like this. Maybe not quite as nice as this.
Head bent over a script, Harvey Brandt narrates the historical moment when the Russian flag is lowered and the American flag is raised. How, by 3:30, a large concourse of people had assembled.
Comprising Americans, Russians of all classes, Creoles, and Indians, all eager witnesses of the ceremonies.
That's a direct quote from the New York Times on that day. The script is rich with primary source material, folded in by the Alaska Day Committee to make this year's reenactment as accurate and inclusive as possible. But venture a few paces to the bottom of Castle Hill, and there's a group of people gathered for whom this moment brings a great deal of pain.
There's never really been a time of healing, whether we're talking about the cultural genocide, the taking of our languages across the state, and all of the trauma that came from being told that who we were wasn't good enough, and who we were wasn't who we should be.
Dionne Brady Howard is a member of the Kiksati clan, original occupants of the land. Through social media and word of mouth, her family organized a counter ceremony this Alaska Day to drum and sing their sorrow out loud. The crowd is much smaller than the one atop Castle Hill, but listening intently. Some are native, some are non-native. A few are crying.
Anytime race relations are brought up, too often people of color are told how we should and shouldn't feel.
Brady Howard, who is a social studies teacher, goes on to say, it's like our African American brothers and sisters who are told to just get over slavery. She then leads the group in an eagle sorrowing song from the Kagwantan clan.
I couldn't walk up the steps to the hill. And I'm glad I didn't have to. I'm glad I could be right here.
Jennifer Carter is a history buff of Russian descent who always attended the Alaska Day reenactment in the past. But she decided not to this year. She's still shaken up by a confrontation she saw last year when a friend brought a sign to Castle Hill thanking her Tlingit ancestors and was told by one organizer it was disruptive.
And she was treated very rudely. And I just vowed that I couldn't be a part of that anymore. So I'm very grateful to have the chance to be here observing the other part of the story that isn't vocalized.
Which is why Carter plans to attend this sorrowing ceremony if it happens again. You could say that October 18th, 2017 was an unprecedented day in this respect. The historical reenactment was split in two. Some, like A.J. Bastian, sitting with her kids atop a stone wall, were a little disappointed by that.
It should all be together so that the children especially who are growing up together should see that we're all making better choices now than in the past.
While others, like Peter Bradley, protested the reenactment altogether. He passed out a resolution calling for the renaming of Alaska Day to Reconciliation Day.
There's a lot of people that are left out of Alaska Day right now, the original people of this land that cared for it for a long time.
Make no mistake, Alaska Day in Sitka is a visibly joyful one. Parents off work, there's a big parade and pie sale. But charged moments like this show that beneath the surface, the traditions surrounding the holiday are fraught. And for Brady Howard, the traditions are an opportunity to have a conversation.
It's not necessarily about the transfer ceremony itself. I think it's going to continue to be a thing in Sitka. But for me, what it's more about is an ability to see another person's perspective and to not automatically go to that defensive place that prevents progress.
Suggesting that though holidays like Alaska Day come around every year, how they're commemorated isn't set in stone. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Emily Kwong.
Now it's time for 49 Voices. This week we're hearing from Eileen Starr in Anchorage. Starr is a site coordinator for Anchorage's Thanksgiving Blessing. On Monday, she and hundreds of volunteers helped give needy families food for Thanksgiving.
There's a great need in our community. A lot of people have financial needs in many different ways. Even if they have jobs, they may not be good jobs. Whether they have great needs or little needs, we just want to bless people. Everyone is welcome. We encourage you to go where the site that serves your zip code, if you can. But we won't turn anybody away at any site. If you want to have this food, we want to give it to you. You don't have to prove that you're poor. You don't have to prove that you have a particular need. We'll have 400 or 500 volunteers that will come and serve by shopping with people, by stocking the shelves, by breaking down cardboard, by serving cookies, by doing registering people. A lot of different jobs that we do. You'll be in and out, almost everybody will be in and out in 30 minutes. We pair them up with a personal shopper who takes them down the food line and says, you can have four of these. Do you want beans or do you want corn? Do you want to have cranberry sauce? So they help them make choices. That way, everybody gets served and treated like they're important, number one. And number two, we can keep our lines moving pretty fast because we will serve almost 3,000 families today. It's a tremendous amount of work yesterday, today, and all the stuff we have to do ahead of time. But it's so much fun because the families who come are happy. They are feeling blessed. They know what they're going to get. And they know they're going to get the same thing as everybody else. They know they're going to get treated with respect. And the people who come to serve are happy to be able to do it. So everybody in the building's happy. So you can't have a better day than that if you're serving 3,000 families. You know, I'm happy that people serve Thanksgiving dinner to, like, at Beans and other places. But it's nice that they have the food, they can take it to their own homes, serve their own families, prepare it how they want to do it, and it makes them feel like they're blessed in their own family.
Eileen Starr lives in Anchorage. 49 Voices is AK's attempt to put every Alaskan on the radio. Thanks for listening to AK this week. We had help from Emily Kwong and Wesley Early. Tune in next week for more unique stories from around the state. I'm Dave Waldron.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. Tonight's stories can be found at our website, alaskapublic.org. We had reports tonight from Emily Russell and Casey Grove in Anchorage, Anna Rose MacArthur in Bethel, Julia Caulfield in Juneau, and Joe Vicknicki in Petersburg. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron, Wesley Early is our web editor, and I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible in part by your local public radio station.
Alaska Humanities Forum grants support creative projects that share the stories of Alaska and explore what it means to be Alaskan. Get details and apply at akhf.org. This message sponsored by Alaska Humanities Forum. Colder temperatures are here, and the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation reminds you of the danger of carbon monoxide, a poisonous gas that you can't see or smell. If it builds up in your home, it can be deadly. Be safe this winter and have a qualified mechanic ensure your heating system is working properly. Never run your car in the garage or operate a portable generator in an enclosed space. Finally, always ensure your home has a working carbon monoxide detector. This message sponsored by AHFC. Now through December 15th is the open enrollment for the health insurance marketplace in Alaska. Plan costs have gone down this year. For free help to enroll, visit getcoveredalaska.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Children's Trust.
This is statewide news on Alaska Public Media.